If you like what we're consider donating, go to WMFO.org and click our donations drive tab to see how you can help us keep it freeform. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 16th of March, 2022. My name is Arthur. I'm going to have a Jack Johnstone directing double feature this morning. That does sound kind of low, huh? For the first, the show's gonna, I'm gonna play one of my favorite shows of all time, The Six Shooter, but it's gonna be bookended by a couple of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. This would be the quarter hour dailies. This one's titled The Shepherd Matter. It aired 66 years ago on the 16th of March, 1956. Elvis was still not a household name at that time. Be later that year. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Providence, Rhode Island calling. Mr. Dollar?
Yes.
One moment, please. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Dollar?
Yes?
This is Dick Porter. I'd like to hire you.
Porter?
Dick Porter. I'm an insurance broker here. Bert Masterson at United Adjustment Bureau suggested I contact
you. Oh, what's the trouble, Mr. Porter?
darned if I know exactly. I just have a client who's taking out all the insurance he can get. I may be wrong, but it looks to me like he's getting ready to die.
Oh.
Can you help me out?
I can try, Mr. Porter.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To Richard Porter, 480 Webster Boulevard, Providence, Rhode Island. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shepherd matter. Expense account item one, $15, airfare and incidentals, Hartford to Providence. I arrived at 2:30 in the afternoon and was in my hotel room by 3:15. At 5 o'clock, I was having a quiet drink with Porter, who turned out to be a 24-year man in the insurance brokerage business and seemed to know what he was about.
I've never had anything like this happen to me, and I didn't quite know what to do about it. I'm glad I can get some expert advice from you.
Well, I don't know how expert the advice will be, but I'll do what I can for you, Mr. Porter.
Want another one of these?
No, I'm fine for now, thank you.
I'll try to explain this matter as far as I know. 2 days ago, Dr. Shepherd called me up and inquired about rates on straight life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
He's carried about $20,000 worth of policies, so 10 years or better. I have the figures in my office.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him the prices for coverage, and he said he'd take $80,000, which would bring him up to an even $100,000. Now, Shepherd's a single man. The beneficiary on his other policies is his mother, Claire Shepherd. She lives over in Pawtucket. His only dependent. He wants to name her beneficiary again.
I see. Now, where do matters stand with Dr. Shepherd right now?
I told him it'd take a few days to draw the policies up. He sent me a check for the first payment and told me to do what had to be done. I don't want to act on his application until I know it's okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, what can you tell me about Dr. Shepherd?
Very little. He seems to have a good practice here in town and does his share of charity work and so on. As far as I know, he's above question. Would have to be, of course, to practice medicine here. He has an apartment above his offices, owns the building, all of his equipment.
Know anything about his friends?
No.
Now, let me understand this about Dr. Shepherd. He called you. You didn't call him. He wanted to buy the insurance. You didn't try to sell it.
That's about it, yes. And that's why I'm worried. Give me 100 people, and I'll show you 99 out of that 100 who will never, never call up an insurance broker and say, I want to buy some life insurance.
Yeah.
People have to be sold life insurance. They'll go out and shop around for fire, theft coverage, automobile insurance, health, almost any kind. But straight life insurance, that has to be sold. On the other hand, suppose Shepard is that 1 in 100.
Yeah, it may be a perfectly legitimate situation. Yeah, Shepard may have looked into his mirror one night and said to himself, I gotta have $100,000 worth of insurance or I won't sleep a wink. Oh, yeah, it could have happened that way, Mr. Porter. But I have to think of those 99 people in that 100.
Sure. Sure, so do I. Well, here's to caution.
Cheers. Expense account item 2, $25. Deposit on a rented car, which I use the following day, driving from place to place, collecting data on Dr. Charles Shepard, M.D. At his bank, I was able to learn that he enjoyed what might be called a lucrative practice, and that, like most people, he spent slightly more than he made. He belonged to a golf club where he was seldom seen. He belonged to a tennis club which he managed to make 3 or 4 times a week. Questioning the pharmacist who had the prescription counter a half block from Dr. Shepard's building and the manager of a cafeteria across the street from same, I was unable to learn who Dr. Shepard's steady companions were or gain any information that would justify his puzzling application for life insurance. Hello?
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'd like to see Dr. Shepard, please. Oh,
do you have an appointment?
No, I don't.
Well, may I have your name, please?
Johnny Dollar.
Dollar. Dollar. Are you a regular patient of Dr. Shepard's, Mr. Dollar?
No, I'm not.
I didn't think I recalled your name. I've been with Dr. Shepard almost 5 years. Who recommended Dr. Shepard?
No one.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I'm afraid doctor's out now and won't be back until late this afternoon.
Well, now, that's funny. I was standing out in front of here 3 minutes ago, and I thought I saw Dr. Shepard walk in.
Please, Mr. Dollar, he is not in to anyone.
What's your name?
Why, I'm Miss Streeter.
Miss Streeter.
Well, yes, but
I'd like to see Dr. Shepard, Miss Streeter. Here.
Oh. Insurance investigator?
Yes. Will you tell the doctor that, please?
Why, yes, I'm sorry I had to tell your doctor was out. He asked me to say that to everyone who came in. I'm afraid the doctor's been acting strangely all day. I'm very much concerned over him. Excuse me.
The tall, pale brunette girl in the crisply starched uniform was certainly concerned about something. She bit her lip, forced on a wan, unprofessional smile, and looked like she wanted to cry just before she disappeared beyond the reception room to seek out Dr. Shepard. I pretended not to notice that part. 1 minute passed, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. No one reappeared. So I pushed the door open and I looked down the corridor leading to the examination rooms and laboratory. I had to notice Dr. Charles Shepard standing at the end of the corridor. Most of his costume was medically correct. White coat, stethoscope in one hand. But in the other hand, he brandished a .32 automatic. And the safety was off.
Stay where you are, mister, and get your hands up. Pocket do you keep your credentials in?
Left inside.
I'll get them. Insurance investigator. For whom?
At the moment, for Mr. Porter.
Dick?
Yeah.
Here, I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar. I guess I'm very nervous these days. Oh.
Mr. Dollar, I'd like to get your address and phone number before you...
That's all right, Corinne. Don't you think this might be a good time to go out and get a bite?
Well, it's a little early, Doctor. I have some lab tests.
Go ahead, Corinne, like a good girl, and lock up, huh?
Yes. Goodbye, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, goodbye.
Very fine girl, Corinne. She's been with me...
5 years, she told me.
Oh. I don't know how I'm going to explain meeting you in the hallway with this in my hand.
Yes. Well, before you try, suppose you snap the safety on.
Oh, yes. I look somewhat foolish, I guess. You want to come in my office?
Sure.
You say Mr. Porter sent
Mr. you... Porter told me you made an application for $80,000 worth of life insurance. We look into things like that, Doctor.
investigate me because I want to buy life insurance?
Yeah, yeah. You're a single man with few responsibilities.
Well, I don't know whether to be irritated or not. Am I going to get my insurance?
I wouldn't be irritated, Doctor. Put yourself in the insurance company's position. They're just not used to this kind of application. Oh, you may get it, I don't know. But obviously you're in some kind of trouble, gun and all.
Well, the whole thing is a ridiculous mess. Mr. Dollar, my life has been threatened by a man who has definite homicidal tendencies. I suppose I've been acting very strangely lately. I don't know whether to leave town or give up my practice.
All you have to do is pick up that telephone and call the police and tell them about it. A threat in your life comes under police business, Doctor.
I know that, and I would go to the police, only, well, it's a very delicate matter. I have a patient's welfare to think of.
You can't very well treat any patient if you're dead. I suppose you sit down and tell me all about it.
All right. Several months ago, I treated a woman named Forbes. A thorough examination and consultation disclosed that her poor physical condition was not based on any organic disorder, but rather upon her own emotional instability. Not an uncommon diagnosis this hectic day and age. You've heard of things like this, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, I've heard of semantics and neurotics and psychotics, but I'm not a doctor.
Well, let me tell you, the psychotherapeutic side of medicine is by far the most challenging, and one in which I've had considerable experience. Consequently, I undertook to treat Mrs. Forbes, hoping to effect a cure.
Are you a psychiatrist, Doctor?
No, I am not. Don't misunderstand me, Mr. Dollar. In the process of treating Mrs. Forbes' physical ailments, I urged her to recount a variety of experiences, talk to her from day to day, probing all the while for the source of her trouble. It has been my intention from the first to place her in the hands of a competent neurologist. I suspected her trouble early in the treatment. She's married to an erratic, ruthless, ill-tempered man, Paul Forbes.
Oh.
I made a grave error when Mrs. Forbes pressed me last week to... Well, I could only tell her to move out and divorce him immediately.
That's pretty extreme advice, Doctor.
I know, but I also know the advice was right. Oh, you aren't in sympathy with me, I can see, but let me tell you that any competent psychiatrist would have advised her the same. I approached her husband on the matter a few days ago.
What?
I explained to him that Mrs. Forbes' health, her very life, is in jeopardy, that more is involved here than just keeping intact a union which has nothing but legality as a binding force.
And Mr. Forbes doesn't care for semantics.
He doesn't care for Mrs. Forbes, Mr. Dollar. He ranted and raved and accused me of trying to break up his home, and finally he attacked me. I managed to get away.
Did he threaten you then?
Yes, he said he'd kill me.
Who else was there?
What do you mean?
Who heard him say these things?
Why... Mrs. Forbes was there, and a servant in their home. Yes, a servant. Upton's his name, I believe.
You should have called the police.
I should have done a lot of things differently in my lifetime, but I didn't call the police. My primary concern is for Mrs. Forbes. Further shock and guilt complex could be totally disastrous to her.
So are you going to creep around here with a gun in your hand?
I don't know whether I'd even know how to use it.
Now, why the application for all the insurance?
Well, I wondered if Forbes might get me. I wanted to be sure my mother was taken care of. I don't know whether anyone's ever threatened your life, and you knew for certain he'd try to carry out the threat, but that is the position I am in.
Well, what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'll think of something, but what about my insurance?
That's up to Mr. Porter. If what you say is true, I wouldn't insure you.
What do you mean, if it's true? Of course it's true.
Doctor, I don't believe it. I left him standing there in the corridor, staring after me. A lonely man. Somehow not as frightened a man as he tried to let me believe. I wondered about that. I was still wondering about it when I went to sleep that night.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, the Shepherd matter becomes a matter even the police can't handle. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood.
Well... we don't have to wait till tomorrow to hear that one. Again, that's Bob Bailey. as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The Shepherd's Matter, the original air date was the 16th of March, 1956. Next up, like I said, we're going to bookend this six-shooter here with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. We'll get back to that Shepherd's Matter. That was quarter-hour dailies. That's why I said tomorrow you'll hear, but right now this is going to be the battle at Tower Creek. It's had an original air date of the 21st of February, 1954. Episode 23 of The Six Shooter. Thanks for listening.
Man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter. A transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Tower Rock sure was spruced up. Flags on almost every building, a big banner stretched all the way across Main Street, all the way from the roof of the hotel to the top of the Wickford Bank. Franklin County Fair, that's what it said. Prizes, rodeo, free barbecue, Saturday, August 20th, come one, come all. Well, tomorrow would be the 20th. I'd come to town day earlier and be sure of getting a room. Good thing I did, too. Only one left is on the second floor. The livery stable side of the hotel at that. I put my clean shirt in the dresser drawer and headed downstairs. The clock in the lobby said 3:15. Well, that meant I had time to sort of give Tower Rock the once over before supper. Thought maybe I'd wander over and see how Kermit and Rome were getting along. But just as I was crossing the street, I saw Rome come out of the front door. Rome! Hey! Hey, Rome!
Hmm? Oh, Britt! Well, finally decided to put in an appearance, huh? How are you?
I'm fine, Rome. Fine. I was just on my way over to see you.
You're not running short of cash, are you, Britt?
No, this is going to be a social call. Not that I'm flush or anything like that.
Come into town for the fair, huh?
Yeah. I haven't been to one since I don't know when. I figured Dad Morgan's cattle would do without me for a few days, so... Well, how are things with you, Ron?
Oh, so.
Bessie, is she all right?
Oh, pretty well.
Kermit and Thelma?
I guess they're all right.
You guess?
I ain't inquired lately. Well, I better get moving. I told Bessie I'd pick her up at the schoolhouse. She's on the decorating committee. I'll see you later, Brett.
Yeah, I'll see you. Couldn't figure out what was the matter with Rome. Well, he froze up when I mentioned Kermit. Right? They'd always been more like kin than in-laws. Folks said it sure was lucky for the Wickford girls to marry two fellows who got along so well, especially after Jess Wickford died and left the bank to both his daughters 50-50. Kermit and Rome had turned into first-class bankers, too. The Wickford Bank probably is worth about twice as much now than it was when Jess had run it.
Well, hello, Britt. Where'd you come from?
Oh, Kermit. Oh, I was just thinking about you.
About me?
Yeah, well, I ran into Rome a minute ago.
I suppose he was shooting off his mouth again.
What? Well, no.
Well, just don't believe everything you hear, Britt. There's two sides to every story. Remember that.
Sure, Kermit.
Well, I got to be running along. Thelma's at the schoolhouse waiting for me to fetch her home.
Well, you could have saved yourself a trip.
Huh?
Well, that's where Rome was heading to get Bessie. He could have picked her up Thelma at the same time.
Well, you don't think they'd ride in the same buggy, do you?
Huh?
Well, I'll probably see you at the fair tomorrow. So long.
Yeah, sure. So long. Well, there just wasn't any doubt about it. There's something that happened between the Binghams and the Madden, that's all. There must have been something pretty serious, too, the way Kermit and Rome had been acting. And knowing Thelma and Bessie like I did, I sure was glad I wasn't involved in that. But they were real firm women, Thelma and Bessie, yeah. Always had been, ever since they were girls. Eh? I couldn't help wondering just what had set them off. Not that it was any of my business, of course, but I... Well, Otis Spear didn't know. Yeah, being the justice of the peace and the local undertaker, he knew almost everything that went on in Foster County.
You ain't never seen nothing like it, Britt, the way they've been behaving. Why, they even spoke to each other for the past 2 months.
You don't say.
Take turns going to church. One Sunday the Binghams attend services, next Sunday the Maddens, just so Thelma and Bessie won't meet up.
Well, that's the darn... I can't believe
well,
it.
Well, that ain't the half, Britt, not the half. You remember the Social 16? You know them couples who always got together and played whist on Friday nights?
Yeah.
Well, it ain't the Social 16 no more. The Binghams pulled out, the McDaniels and Johnsons and the Potters, they left at the same time. We got two social eats now.
You mean this foolishness has gone beyond Thelma and Bessie? Other folks are taking sides, too?
Well, see, they are. The whole town split right down the middle.
Well, I never heard of such a thing. Well, how'd it start, anyway?
Well, last May, that was the beginning. Thelma's birthday is the first week in May. Her sister Bessie, just a year younger, almost to the day her birthday's the 10th or 11th, right in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, seems Kermit bought his wife a new Surrey for a birthday present. Had it shipped all the way out from Kansas City. Thelma sure was proud, too. Well, you can't blame her. It was just about the nicest carriage this town had ever seen. Well, the nicest until it came time for Rome to give Bessie her present the following week.
You don't mean he bought Bessie a Surrey, too?
Yeah, that's what he did. Well, yeah. Even fancier than the one Kermit gave to Thelma. Yep, a whole lot fancier. Red leather seats with real springs in them, a white top and painted white wheels. Of course, Rome said it was just a coincidence that he'd ordered Bessie Surrey long before he found out that's what Kermit was giving to Thelma.
Well, and it sounds reasonable, too. He could have done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, some folks think so and some don't. Uh-huh. Kermit and Thelma claimed it was just plain spite work. The Rome and Bessie had always been jealous of him. Anyhow, that Surrey business just seemed to set everybody off, especially the women. Oh, being sisters, I guess they'd had their grievances before, but they'd always held them back. Now they just let fly in all directions. Why, Thelma's even going to...
Huh? What were you going to say, Otis?
Oh, nothing, Britt, nothing. you're going to stay for the fair, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure, that's why I'm here.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Well, I was thinking, maybe you wouldn't mind helping me out.
Oh, what?
You see, I'm general chairman of the whole doings, and I got almost everything set excepting some of the judging.
Oh, well, I'm not much of an authority, but I guess I can tell a cow from a horse.
Oh, no. We're all fixed up in that department, but the baked goods and preserves and pickles, well, I just haven't been able to find the right person to hand out the blue ribbons there.
Oh, well, I don't know anything about cooking, Otis.
Well, you know about tasting, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what you got to do, Britt. Sample whatever they put in front of you and say which one tastes the best.
Oh, no, wait
I'll
a minute.
I tell you what. I'll just put you down for preserves. I'll get somebody else to take over the rest of the stuff.
No, but...
Well, I got a meeting of the barbecue committee over at the general store.
Yeah, but...
You'll be at the schoolhouse 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when the judge is supposed to start.
But Otis, what... Where's the idea of me giving out blue ribbons for preserves? I couldn't tell peach from grape if it wasn't for the color. Well, there wasn't any sense of me standing here in the funeral parlor worrying about it. So I went back to the hotel to fix up for supper. Yeah? Who is it?
Bessie Madden, Britt.
Just a second. Well, won't you come in, Bessie?
Well...
Hey. Well, you're looking well.
Oh, so are you, Britt. So are you. My goodness, I don't think I've ever seen you look better.
No, now.
Well, now, what I come by for was to pick you up and take you over to our house for supper. You don't have no other plans, do you?
No. I was just going to eat here at the hotel.
Oh, you don't think we'd let you eat at the hotel, Britt? Why, you're one of our closest friends, always have been.
Well, I
don't know why Rome didn't invite you when you met up this afternoon. Guess he just took it for granted that you'd know I'd be expecting you. We're having fried chicken, hot biscuits, some of my strawberry preserves. You do like chicken, don't you, Britt?
Oh, sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? I've got my Surrey outside, and I'd be glad...
Well, oh...
Oh, excuse me, Bessie.
Of course, Brett, of course. Brett, well, I just heard that you were in Tower Rock, and I wanted to tell you Kermit and I are expecting you for supper. Now, I won't take no for an... Oh, I thought you were alone. Didn't mean to interrupt anything.
You're a little late, Thelma. Brett's having supper with Rome and me.
Might have expected you'd pull a stunt like this, Bessie Madden. Trying to bribe him, huh?
Bribe ladies.
And I suppose you didn't ask him to supper yourself? This is one time you can't lie out of it, Thelma. I heard you with my own voice.
There's no reason I shouldn't ask him. Brett's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours? You've never put yourself out for him before, not once in your whole life.
Bessie.
And since when were you so interested in his welfare?
Thelma.
The minute you found out he was going to be judging the preserves tomorrow, that's when.
Preserves?
As if I had any cause to try and influence him. My strawberry preserves have won first prize at every county fair for the last 10 years.
Yes, but I've never entered against you before. I let you win, but this time it's going to be different.
You're just making a fool of yourself, Thelma. You couldn't cook up a strawberry preserve if your life depended on it.
I've got Mama's recipe, too, and don't you forget it.
Now, hold
and
on.
All
here,
I have
now, hold on. Now, just hold on here now. Now, I want to get this straight. Now, both of you have entered your strawberry preserves in the fair tomorrow.
I've entered my preserves. I can't speak for her.
No, mine will be there, too. Don't you worry about that.
And I'm supposed to judge between them. Is that it?
Oh, the Spears said you'd agreed to do it.
That's right.
Well, Britt.
Just wait till I get my hands on Otis Spears.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, I told Thelma and Bessie that I couldn't have supper with either one of them. As a matter of fact, I kind of plain lost my appetite, I guess. I did take me a while to get rid of them, though. Both of them kept lagging behind, wanting to get the last word in. But finally they went home. Well, Otis Spears wasn't at the funeral parlor, so I went over to Widow Berkeley's boarding house where he lived and waited for him. It was after 9 o'clock before he showed up. Miss Berkeley had already gone to bed, and I heard the front door open. I saw him head for the hall steps. Hold on, Otis.
Huh? Oh, Brad. Well, what are you doing here?
I just wanted you to know that I won't be judging any preserves tomorrow.
What?
You heard me, Otis.
But Brad, you promised you'd do it.
I didn't promise any such kind of a thing. And I don't appreciate your trying to get me in the middle of this feud between Thelma Bingham and Bessie Madden, either.
Oh, you found out, huh?
I sure did. Well, they were over to see me, both of them. Oh, I never heard such a hen squabble in my whole life.
Well, I told you this thing between them was serious.
Well, there were a few things you didn't tell me, like the fact that they're both entering strawberry preserves at the Doohan's tomorrow.
Well, no, Brick, you don't understand it.
I understand, all right. You didn't want to tackle the job of judging those preserves yourself, so you shifted on me. I understand, all right.
I couldn't judge them, Britt. Don't you see? Whichever way I was to choose, I'd make enemies of half the folks in town. My burying business would drop off 50%.
Now, Otis,
yeah, but you're an impartial judge, Britt. You ain't taking no sides in this fracas yet.
And what's more, I don't intend to, either.
Well, of course, that's the way you feel. If you want Thelma and Bessie to go on feuding, and you won't do nothing to stop it.
Well, I sure don't see how my judging their preserves would have anything to do with ending their fight.
It's this way, Brett. You're the six-shooter. Everybody in Tower Rock likes you and respects you, and they all know you ain't got no axe to grind in this affair, so whatever decision you handed down, they'd have to accept it. Both Thelma and Bessie.
Oh, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't.
Oh, they would, all right. Now, what I'm getting at is this, Brett. Folks have forgotten about the two surreys by now. The argument's going way past that. And these here preserves have just about become the crux of the matter. You see, Bessie's always been known for making the best strawberry preserve in the whole county. They're her chief claim to fame, you might say. Why, she's even took blue ribbons at the state fair.
Oh, that's so.
And nobody's even thought of entering against her nut for years and years.
Not until this year.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Now, if Thelma's preserve should be judged better than Bessie's,
Well, that'll mean Thelma's beat her on her own ground. Bessie wouldn't have a leg to stand on. She'd just have to admit that Thelma won out and, well, that might settle the trouble between them.
Mm-hmm. You think that'd be best, Otis, for Thelma's deserves to win?
Well, not necessarily. You see, if Bessie should take the blue ribbon again, well, that'll sort of show everybody that she's still top dog. In the preserve line, anyway. And folks who've been supporting Thelma might swing over to Bessie's side. And that might settle everything, too.
Mm-hmm. The way you've got it figured out, it wouldn't matter who wins. Either way, the fight would be over, is that right?
That's right. That's
uh-huh.
it, exactly.
Well,
of course, well, it's possible that Thelma's taking first prize might just make Bessie madder than ever and sort of add fuel to the fire. And it's possible that if Bessie was to win again, well, vice versa.
Vice versa, yeah. I'd say it's more than possible. I'd say it's likely.
Oh, now, Britt, you mustn't look on the dark side. I'm absolutely certain that if you make the right decision tomorrow, you'll end this whole thing once and for all. Thelma and Bessie will go back to being fond of each other, and Tower Rock can have a little peace and quiet for change.
I see. And just what is the right decision, Otis?
Why, that's easy, Britt.
It is, huh?
Well, sure. All you have to do is give the blue ribbon to whichever one made the best taste in preserves. You don't think we're running a crooked county fair, do you?
Well, sir, I never saw a fellow like Otis Spears. He could talk circles around a Philadelphia lawyer. Well, finally, I saw that if I was going to get any sleep at all that night, I'd just have to give in. But I made up my mind to one thing. I wasn't going to have Thelma or Bessie turning on me, either one of them. I was going to say that their preserves tasted exactly the same and call it a tie. And that way there wouldn't be any harm done, and I'd be leaving things just the way I found them. Of course, I didn't tell Otis what I was planning to do or anything. I just promised that I'd meet him at the schoolhouse in the morning.
Good. I knew you'd come around, Britt. When you saw how much I needed you, I knew you couldn't let me down.
Well, Otis...
I'll walk you to the door.
Never mind. I'll find my way out. Night.
Night, Britt. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
There was one thing I forgot to tell you. It sort of slipped my mind.
Oh, what's that?
In case you have any trouble deciding as to whose preserves are the best, well, there couldn't be a tie.
There couldn't be. Why not?
Oh, you could call it a tie, but that would still mean that Thelma had won.
How's that?
But don't you see, Brett? If Thelma's strawberry preserves are just as good as Bessie's, well, folks would think that Thelma had been letting her sister win all these years by not contesting with her before. No, a tie would be the same as giving the prize to Thelma. You do see that, don't you?
Yes. Sure. Well, so long.
So long, Britt. And may the best woman win.
Britt. Britt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hello, Kermit. You're up pretty late, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been looking for you.
For me? Oh.
Yeah, well, Britt, I think this quarrel between Thelma and Bessie and between Rome and me and all the rest of it, I think it's gone entirely too far.
You do? Well, I'm glad to hear you say so.
But if Bessie and Rome won't come to their senses, well, they've just got to be taught a lesson. Maybe Thelma's right. Maybe the fair tomorrow is the place to do it.
What?
Well, at least everybody will be there to see Bessie when she gets her comeuppance. That is, if Thelma's strawberry preserves... what I'm getting at is this. Now, Thelma's just got to win, Britt. If she don't, my life will just be miserable. And Thelma's got a real knack for making me miserable.
Hello, Rome.
Hope you don't mind my waiting here in your room, but I just had to see you. Bessie sent me.
Well, it was the same thing over again from Rome, except that he was a little more forceful than Kermit. Well, after he'd gone, I tried to get some sleep. But all night long, I just kept dreaming about strawberry preserves. Jars and jars of strawberry preserves. Anyway, I finally woke up. It was after 7 o'clock, nearly 3 hours after my usual getting up time. Somehow I didn't feel very rested either. I got dressed and I stopped off at Gravy Gibson's Cafe for some breakfast. Not that I could eat very much. Then I started off in the direction of the schoolhouse. And the judging was already underway when I got there.
Second prize goes to Mrs. Hal Spidle for her devil's food cake. Honorable mention to Mrs. Johnny Seals for her chocolate lair. Honorable mention to Miss Addie Simpson for her sponge. Now, let's see, the next item is... Yes. Preserve. I don't see you. Oh, there he is. All right, right up here, Britt. Right up here. There he is.
Excuse me. Beg your pardon.
Well, folks, I guess you all know Britt Ponce. Well, Britt has been kind enough to volunteer his services in judging the preserve. Now, let's see, I believe there are, only two entries. Well, yeah, that's right, two. Both strawberry. Yeah, quite a coincidence. Yes. Well, the first entry is submitted by Mrs. Bessie Madden. Bessie Madden. And the second entry comes from Mrs. Thelma Bingham. Yes, it's there. Now, I'll just unscrew the caps on these jars. Hey, goodness gracious. Miss Madden doesn't know her own... there we are. You can just use a spoon there on the table, Britt. It's clean. All right, if you're ready, here's the first jar. Mrs. Bessie Madden.
Thanks, Otis.
Hey, just... Britt, be careful!
Golly, I don't know how that happened, Otis. I thought I had a good, firm grip on it. Well, I sure am sorry.
I'll bet you are. Well, folks, I seems we had a little accident up here. Mrs. Madden's preserves are kind of divided between the floor and Britt's trousers. I just don't know what we can do under the circumstances. Looks like, we'll have to rule that there's only one entry available for tasting.
You just ruled no such thing, Otis Spears. I've got another jar of my preserves right out in the hall.
Oh, another jar?
Bring them along, figuring there might be a slip-up somewhere. I'll be right back.
that was sure far-sighted of Bessie, wasn't it, folks? Well, while we're waiting, Britt can go ahead and taste Mrs. Bingham's jar. Here you are, Britt. I'll hold it for you. Just spoon right in.
Well...
Here now. And I'd appreciate it if you'd see that nothing happens to this one, Otis.
Don't worry, Bessie. Don't you worry. That one come off a little easier. All right, Britt. These are Mrs. Madden's. Go right ahead. Well, you had enough?
Yeah, I've had enough.
All right, folks, all right. Quiet down. Britt Ponsett is ready to announce his decision.
Well, it's my opinion that I want to be sure of one thing first. Now, I understand that my job is to say whose preserves taste the best. Is that right? I'm supposed to pick the best-tasting strawberry preserves in the whole county. Is that right, Otis?
That's right, Britt. That's right. Yeah.
All right, then. Now, these preserves of Mrs. Madden's, they're very good. You might say they're excellent. But I've had better. Now, there's no doubt about it. I've tasted better. And right here this morning, too. Right here in Tower Rock. Now, Mrs. Bingham's preserves here. Now, they're good. No, they're more than good. They're excellent, too.
but they're not the best. Ladies and gentlemen, to me, the best tasting strawberry preserves in Foster County are the ones I ate this morning at Gravy Gibson's lunchroom. No, I'm awarding the blue ribbon to Gravy Gibson. You see that he gets it, will you, Otis?
Wait, you can't do this, Rick. Gravy Gibson wasn't even entered.
Now, you told me you wanted me to pick the best tasting preserves in the county, and that's what I done.
Why, the very idea, comparing our preserves to the kind of thing Gravy Gibson serves up.
It's an outrage. I've never been so insulted in all my whole life.
Now, you see here, Britt,
if you think you can get away with this.
Why, for 10 years, Bessie's preserves have been winning blue ribbon.
And Thelma used the same recipe I did. Mother's recipe, and nobody's ever had a finer recipe for strawberry preserves than Minnie Whitford.
That's right.
Now, just a minute.
Don't you just a minute ask.
No, sir. Why, half the time you can't even eat Gravy Gibson's food.
Why, everybody knows that.
Of course. Well, this is the last county fair I'm ever going to enter, Otis Spears.
And that goes for me, too. Bessie, come on, let's get out of here.
The sooner, the better.
Well, don't just stand there, Kermit. Can't you see we're leaving?
Yes, dear, yes.
No? Come on.
Yes, Bessie.
Why'd you see that, Brett? They went off together. All four of them. Together.
Yeah, that's how it looked, all right.
Oh, if that don't beat the Dutch. You got them so mad at you, they all went off together. I might have known you was up to something.
Hmm? Why, I don't know what you're talking about, Otis. I was just giving my considered opinion about strawberry preserves. The funny thing about it was it's true what I said. The preserves I'd had and my breakfast toast over at Gravy Gibson's did taste better than Thelma's or Bessie's. Of course, the fact of the matter was, I really couldn't taste their preserves at all. I just burned the daylights out of my tongue drinking Gravy's coffee. Couldn't taste a thing afterwards. Boy, that was miserable coffee if I ever... The Gravy sure is a terrible cook.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Thank you, Ad Council. That we heard James Stewart starring as Britt Ponsett in episode 23 of The Six Shooter, Battle at Tower Rock, with an original air date of the 21st of February, 1954. I've played that before here on the Grand Hour. It's an enjoyable one. All right. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to conclude the show with a continuation of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Shepherd's Matter. This one had an original air date of the 17th of March, 1956. Next week, I'll have to compress the three remaining quarter dailies into one show. So I got something to look forward to there to do this weekend. All right, we'll go ahead and start that. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Dick Porter, Mr. Dollar.
Hi.
Did you check on Dr. Shepherd?
Yeah.
Do I write up his policies?
Well, that's up to you, Mr. Porter. Dr. Shepherd's life has been threatened.
What?
That's according to him.
And the man who threatened his life has definite homicidal tendencies, also according to Dr. Shepard.
Well, well, what do you think?
Porter, I think Dr. Shepard's a liar.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Richard Porter, 480 Webster Boulevard, Providence, Rhode Island. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Shepherd matter. More expenses. Item 3, 26 cents. One bottle of aspirin for Mr. Porter. I felt he was going to need it.
I hope you aren't trying to be funny, Mr. Dollar.
I'm not, Mr. Porter. I think you've got a tough decision to make. I know that the commission on $80,000 worth of insurance would be high.
Sit down.
Oh, thanks. Mr. Porter, Dr. Shepard told me he bought, or tried to buy, all that insurance because he thought a man named Forbes was going to kill him. He bought it, he said, to make certain his mother is well provided for. He was carrying a .32 Colt.
Mm.
Now, he spoke of treating Forbes' wife and of advising her that divorce would settle her health problem. Mr. Forbes didn't like that and accused Shepard of trying to wreck his home, and, well, that's about it.
Now, what have we got?
Well, your Dr. Shepard is either nuts or an idiot or the cleverest man alive. I don't know. I do know I believed about one half of what he told me. Maybe less.
What reason would he have to lie?
Beats me. If someone threatened your life or mine, we'd turn to the police for help. Now, Shepard won't do that. Insists that it would probably be hazardous in the case of his patient, Mrs. Forbes.
Well, I don't want to write up this policy if what he says is true. But I don't want to pass up the commission if it isn't true. Can you stick around town for another day or two and find out about it?
I'll do what I can, Mr. Porter. Go ahead. Have an aspirin. He had an aspirin, and I had a car ride. Once again, out to the offices of Dr. Shepard. The same things were more or less going on in the same way. His nurse, Miss Streeter, appeared as distraught as ever when she recognized me. There was a quick dabbing at the eyes, a straightening of the hair before she spoke.
Good morning, Mr. Dollar.
Hello. Like to see the doctor again.
He was calling Mr. Porter's office trying to locate you. I'll buzz him. Mr. Dollar, do you have anything to do with why Doctor's been carrying a gun?
No. That's his business.
In other words, I should mind my business.
Well, I'm being honest. I've advised him what to do on the matter.
What matter?
He'll have to explain that to you, Miss Streeter. It doesn't make much sense to me.
You can go back now.
Okay, thanks.
Hello, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Doctor.
You were pretty insulting yesterday.
I'm sorry about that, but we both have a problem to solve. And I get paid sometimes for deliberately insulting people.
You're a strange one.
Do you want to change your story about all this?
I wish I could change it. It's still a mess, a bad mess. I thought it all out last night, and I still must hold to my original thinking. I have to place my concern for my patient, Mrs. Forbes, before anything else.
In other words, you won't call the police and tell them your life's been threatened.
No, and you're very stubborn about that part. I don't think you comprehend the situation at all.
Look, wait a minute. Let's understand each other, Doctor. If this man Forbes is all you say he is, and you say you're the expert on homicidal tendencies, then the best thing for you to do is to prefer charges against him for threatening your life and have him locked up. Now, you could do that, according to what you've told me about Mrs. Forbes and a servant in their home witnessing his threats.
I will try to explain again. I can't do that for Mrs. Forbes' sake. I just can't. She's been through a shattering ordeal. I must attempt to resolve this quietly. Now, true, I can generally anticipate a man's actions inside my office under clinical conditions, but I... Well, Forbes is different. That's why I tried to contact you today. Someone like you could approach Forbes and possibly persuade him to discard his ideas of violence. Probably do it in a quiet way, too. What does Mr. Porter pay you?
Well, what's that got to do with it?
I'm willing to pay you. I mean, you and I don't seem to get along very well, but I phone Porter and he tells me you're one of the best men in your line of business. I'll pay you to go to Paul Forbes and talk to him as I've described.
I can't figure you, Doctor.
Now, let you and I not get into any personality arguments. Will you do this for me for your regular fee?
I was going to do it anyhow, for Mr. Porter and the fee he pays me. I just wanted to check you first. I'll do it, but I still think it's a matter for the police.
All right, let's leave it this way. You go talk to Forbes. If you think he means to kill me, then I'll call the police and prefer charges against him, patient or no patient. How's that?
That sounds a little more sensible, Doctor. I took down the home address of Paul Forbes and climbed to my rented car and drove over to his home in the gilded edge of the city. A story and a half colonial with all the trimmings. Lawns, trees, Plymouth convertible, a push-button station wagon in the garage. It was a nice warm spring day and some flowers were blooming and smelling up the area in a very nice way. Flies buzzed, bees droned, birds sang. And I went up and pressed the doorbell. I should have gone butterfly catching or taken a plane to Spokane.
Yeah?
I'm looking for Paul Forbes. Does he live here?
Yeah, he sure does. I'm Forbes.
Mr. Forbes, my name is Johnny Dollar.
Dollar?
Yeah, and I came over to talk to you.
You get out of my way!
The front of his gun slapped against the side of my head, and I went down to my knees. A door slammed somewhere, and someone ran away. I twisted around, trying to see what it was all about. And then I managed to get to my feet in time to see Paul Forbes plunging the Plymouth out the driveway and heading I don't know where.
Goodness, my goodness. What happened here? Where's Mr. Forbes? You hurt?
Yeah, I'll be...
Oh, Miss Forbes! Miss Forbes! Okay. Oh, let me help you, sir. Here, give me your arm.
Yeah.
We better sit you down over here.
Okay, thanks.
Oh,
thanks.
My goodness. My goodness gracious, sir. How did this happen?
Mr. Forbes swung a gun at me.
Oh, no, sir. No, sir. Oh, no, sir. No. Easy, sir. Easy. Easy.
Nice, thanks.
Now, let's sit down here.
What happened here?
I'm afraid Mr. Forbes attacked this gentleman, Miss Forbes.
Call the doctor up. Then go to my medicine chest and get some swabs and a pan of cold water.
Right away, ma'am.
Wait, the doctor isn't necessary. It just made me dizzy.
Your cut. It might be deep. Well, get the first aid things and some brandy, Upton.
Right away, ma'am.
This is unforgivable. Just unforgivable conduct. Please, I don't know who you are. Are you a friend of Paul's?
No, I'm Johnny Dollar. I wanted to discuss with your husband something. I take it you're Mrs. Forbes.
Yes. Oh, Upton, set them right here.
Yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am. You feeling a little better, sir?
I don't know yet. Hey, let me try some of that.
Yes, yeah, certainly, sir, certainly. There we go, sir. Easy now, easy.
Thanks.
How does it look to you, Upton?
Well, I believe it's not too deep, Mrs. Forbes. How's it feel, Mr. Dollar?
No, I don't think it's very deep. I'll be all right in a minute.
Upton, go telephone Dr. Shepherd and tell him to come over here immediately.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Dollar, I can't tell you how sorry I am for this. You can bring suit against us. You can do anything you want to, Mr. Dollar. Paul's temper is just ungovernable these days. He could have killed you. He took the car and ran.
Yeah.
I don't know what's gotten into him. 2 nights ago, he attacked my personal physician, threatened to kill him. And now he's attacked you for no reason at all.
Any idea where he might have gone?
Heaven only knows. Mad. That's what he is, Mr. Dollar. He's mad.
Pauline Forbes had a right to be scared from what I'd seen of her and from what I'd seen of her husband. He was an angry man with a gun in his hand, slugging at anyone in sight. She was a distraught woman with a darkening spot underneath her right eye, and it wasn't mascara. I began to wonder who needed more looking after. Dr. Shepherd, Mrs. Forbes, or Johnny Dollar?
Now, you just lie still now, sir.
Why?
I guess you kind of fainted a little bit. Is there anything I can get you, sir?
No. No, just tell me about Mr. Forbes.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Look, I'm an insurance investigator. I came here today to talk to Mr. Forbes about threatening Dr. Shepherd's life.
Well, I wouldn't want to talk out of turn, sir. You better discuss that with Ms. Forbes.
Now, just one question. Did Mr. Forbes threaten Dr. Shepherd's life?
Yes, sir.
You heard him?
I did, sir. He attacked Dr. Shepherd here 2 nights ago.
Did he also attack Mrs. Forbes?
Mr. Dollar, this is an unhappy house. Things have gone all wrong here these last few months. Mr. Forbes changed. Mr. Forbes, I don't know. But please, don't ask me to speak up against anyone.
I'm just trying to find out the best thing to do for everybody concerned.
What can you do, sir?
Well, I didn't think anything like this would happen.
Terrible, Doctor. Terrible.
This about settles it. Now, I want you to go up to your room and lie down. There's no sense in your getting any more excited.
I want to see about Mr. Dollar first.
Oh, good morning, Doctor.
Hello, Upton. Let's have a look at this dollar. Get that light.
Yes, sir.
How is it?
Well, I don't think it's anything worse than a cut. How do you feel, Dollar?
Oh, an aspirin might straighten me out.
I hope so. Captain?
Yes, I'll get some, sir.
Dollar, I should have taken your advice yesterday. I'm going to take it now. I'm going to call the police and have this man arrested. He might kill somebody next time.
Yeah, am I all right?
Sit up. Dizzy?
Yeah, a little.
That'll wear off.
What will they do to Paul?
Well, they'll take him into custody and probably talk some sense to him.
Oh, this is awful.
You go up to your room now, Mrs. Forbes. We'll handle this. Oh, Upton, take Mrs. Forbes upstairs.
Yes, sir. You just come along, Miss Forbes.
Thank you.
She is not a well woman.
She looks all right to me.
I wish she were. I'm going to get an x-ray on that head. Can you come by the office this afternoon?
Yeah, I guess so.
Give me the police. I doubt if it's concussion or anything like that, but it's best to play safe.
You're a safe player all the time, aren't you, Doctor?
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Now, look here. I'm not... Hello? Yes. I want to talk to somebody about a threat on my life. My name is Shepard. Dr. Charles Shepard.
When I left him, he was reporting Paul Forbes to the police. He gave them Forbes' description and the license number of the Plymouth Forbes was driving. I didn't stay beyond that. Maybe I should have. Maybe I should never have left that house. I'm not sure, but if I hadn't left, I might have saved a life.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, well, the big lie is as true as little green apples. Join us, won't you, when I bite into one and spit out a bullet. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Heard that. Bob Bailey, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, though you won't be hearing it tomorrow. You'll be hearing the conclusion of the Shepherd's Matter next week here on the Grand Hour. Jack Johnstone directed those quarter hour dramas in 50 and 56, 2 years prior to that. He did, I believe he directed all of the Six Shooters, part of the condition of Jimmy Stewart being part of that production. So yeah, featured a couple of his directing milestones here on Jack Johnstone double feature. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.